From the KTOO newsroom, I'm Pablo Peña. Alaska Native cultural and political leader Byron Malott died unexpectedly today at age 77. Malott served under former Governor Bill Walker, who confirmed his death Friday. According to the Anchorage Daily News, Malott suffered a heart attack in Juneau late Thursday before being flown to Anchorage. Malott, a Democrat, and Walker, an independent, both ran for governor in 2014 before merging their campaigns. They went on to defeat the Republican incumbent, with Malott as lieutenant governor.
You don't see that in partisan politics. And he was he loved Alaska much more than he loved politics.
During their term, Walker and Malott developed a close personal relationship. Malott resigned shortly before the 2018 election. At the time, Walker said Malott had made inappropriate overtures to a woman and suspended his re-election campaign shortly after. Walker says the two remained close, regularly talking on the phone and having dinner with one another's family. He remembers Malott was a tireless advocate for equality, justice, and public safety in rural Alaska.
After all he has done for Alaska, Alaska is a better place because of him.
Malott was Tlingit from Yakutat. He was of the Raven moiety and clan leader of the Quashiquan. He served as mayor of Yakutat as a young man and went on to hold a number of high-profile positions in business and government throughout the state. He was president of Sealaska Corp., Southeast Alaska's regional Native corporation, and served briefly as mayor of Juneau before resigning to become executive director of the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation. Marlene Johnson is a former chairman of Sealaska Corp., whose friendship with Malott goes back nearly 60 years. Johnson fondly remembers working with him to convince federal leaders to pass the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act.
He spent his whole life working for the people and for the state of Alaska.
Richard Peterson is president of the Central Council of Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska. He says he was shocked to learn the news Friday. Peterson considered Malott a friend and mentor from the time he himself was a young mayor in Kasan.
He could be a fierce, fighter for what needed to be fought for, but at the same time, he could be that person that gave you the hug and encouraged you and uplifted you.
Peterson says Malott's death would leave a tremendous void in the lives of those who knew him and loved him, but his legacy of leadership will continue on. The Alaska Supreme Court says that the recall campaign against Governor Mike Dunleavy has a legally valid basis, and the recall can appear on the ballot if enough signatures are gathered. The decision by the five justices, with a partial dissent by Justice Craig Stowers, was announced in a two-page order Friday afternoon. Recall Dunleavy campaign manager Claire Pywell celebrated the ruling.
It's go time. This is the moment where thousands of Alaskans have been waiting to see justice and to see a reality that we know has been coming for a long time, right? Our grounds have always been solid. We've always been confident that we would prevail in court. And so this is a huge day for people who have been watching this.
The State Division of Elections, based on advice from Dunleavy's Attorney General, Kevin Clarkson, had initially rejected the campaign's grounds for recall, saying they were legally insufficient. That ruling was reversed in January by Anchorage Superior Court Judge Eric Arseth, and the state appealed Arseth's decision to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court's two-page order Friday did not lay out the legal basis for the justice's decision beyond simply affirming Arseth's ruling, saying that a full opinion would follow. The Department of Law released a statement saying it's very disappointed with the decision. Clarkson said, quote, "The court ignored Alaska's constitutional history and has effectively rewritten our constitution and statutes to adopt no-clause political recall." Six village public safety officers graduated from the Department of Public Safety Training Academy in Sitka last week. Half of them are now ready to serve Bering Strait regional communities.
VPSO Nicholas Tooley is going out to Savunga. VPSO Ivanoff is going to Unalakleet, and VPSO Topcock is going to Teller, and I think they're going to do a great job.
According to Lieutenant Chad Gaydon, commander of DPS Training Academy, those three VPSO recruits went through 9 weeks of training. As Gaydon reminds us, these officers are not trained in the same way Alaska State Troopers are, mostly because they do not carry firearms.
So what they don't get that the regular municipal officers get is mostly firearms training. They also don't get nearly as much of the driving training. They get just a little bit, but certainly not to the extent that the municipal officers and troopers get. They don't get active shooter. They don't get some of the, a lot of the other things that kind of go around the firearms portion of it.
Nicholas Tooley of Savunga says he knew the reality of working in law enforcement in rural communities, which is part of the reason why he wanted to fill a needed role.
Wanted to help again. I wanted to feel like purposeful again, I guess. And so I thought I'd become a VPO, and I became a VPO for over a year. And my coworker mentioned to me that there's a VPSO opening and one for Savunga, and I was like, awesome. Well, I'll take that job, be a VPSO here in my own hometown.
Tooley of Savunga, Harry Ivanoff of Unalakleet, and Darren Topcock of Teller are all completing their 14-day quarantine in their houses as mandated by local city leaders. And the Baldwin Peninsula near Kotzebue has seen a massive increase in beavers over the last two decades. That's according to new research from the University of Alaska Fairbanks. With more beavers come more dams, which impacts everything from fish populations to permafrost. As Wesley Early with Alaska's Energy Desk reports, scientists and locals are still trying to figure out what caused the dam influx and how to slow some of its more serious effects.
Henry Horner is the president of the Tribal Council for the Village of Kobuk. He's lived in the village since the 50s and says that he remembers beavers popping up in the region periodically, but they're considerably more now, and they can be a nuisance.
They're such as for fishing, stuff like that, you know, they'll be blocking the creeks and stuff like that.
A new paper from the University of Alaska Fairbanks shows a massive increase in beaver activity in the region. In 2002, there were two beaver dams near Kotzebue. Now, there are 98. And when beavers dam, UAF researcher Ken Tape says you can see it from space.
What we're seeing in the satellite imagery is that beavers have been building these new ponds and moving into these tree line and eventually into these tundra areas. And that's pretty exciting and a little bit scary as well.
He says he's not surprised the beavers like the area. It's got water, food, and willow trees for them to form dams. While scientists don't yet know what caused the migration, Tape says that there's speculation that the beavers could be migrating in response to heavy trapping during the 19th century. Additionally, he says climate change may be a factor.
We know that their habitat has improved in the tundra, so more shrubby vegetation, more unfrozen water in winter. Again, things that I know people in the region have observed. And so beavers are probably exploiting those things, the improved habitat, and moving into these tundra areas.
Remember when Tape said things are getting a little scary too? Well, when beavers build their dams, they're slowing down streams and flooding the surrounding land. That introduces a new source of heat to the area, adding to the gradual decline of permafrost. Additionally, when you create a pond where there was none before, it creates what Tape called thermokarst.
You thaw permafrost and you create these pits in the landscape where that permafrost is thawed, the ground subsides, and it can turn into kind of a mess.
Tape says beavers tend to flock to these thermokarsts, compounding the impact they were already making to the landscape.
What we see is that beavers seem to be accelerating the effects of climate change when they make these ponds. And, you know, if it were just a few dozen ponds, it wouldn't be a big deal. But what we're actually seeing is thousands of new ponds over the recent decades.
Back in Kobuk, Tribal President Horner says, in addition to increasing the rate of permafrost melt, the beavers are also affecting salmon spawning.
Well, upriver, I see where the old dams and the salmon have to start spawning elsewhere.
Horner says some locals think that eliminating the beavers is a viable solution to their concerns, though he doesn't see it as very practical.
Some of the elders would say, kill the beaver, and then they went get the beaver, but then, well, they think they got it, you know, another one arrived.
Tape with UAF says that he doesn't see the beavers as a pest, but there are local and global implications to having thousands of new lakes in the area. He says that researchers are hoping to meet with a group of locals in the future to discuss the future of beavers in the Northwest Arctic.
And we're going to need local perspectives to sort of, if we want to implement any management, or maybe the management is just hands off and let's see what happens. I think that depends on a lot on what people decide in these various communities.
For now, Horner and Kobuk says they're going to continue keeping a watchful eye on their new neighbors. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Wesley Early in Kotzebue.
This is KTOO.